if you could just bobble that. That was a big part of the 80s sound, Dalton. You could just put that in songs today and be like, man, that sounds like an 80s song here. I worked in rock and roll radio for a couple decades. I used to say, with an Adam's apple so big it casts its own shadow, here's Rick Ocasek in the Cars, and let's go. Rick Ocasek dead at age 70 or 75. I saw on the text line somebody said Wikipedia says 75.
Oh, that settles it.
Yeah, well, it's because Wikipedia can't be changed. I don't know. NYPD saying he's 75. Public records list the age at 70. Let's guess 70. I don't know.
Just split the difference. That's 72 right. And a half. See, the only way now to know is Carfax.com. It's the only way to figure out the exact age.
Dalton pointed out maybe you should consult Carfax to find anything out about the cars. Hey, coming up this hour, a lot to talk about. We'll talk some state news with our buddy Jeff Poor coming up in just a few. Plus, Jeff's going to be on Midday Mobile today. He's in town. Going to do his he's going to do his Huntsville show live from our studios as well. Speaking of live in studios, yes.
Well, I was just going to see, is he going to visit his friends at the Lanyap offices also while he's in town? He's always
I think it was a secret that he doesn't know that they don't know. I don't know.
Maybe
I don't
not,
know. We'll have to find out what he's going to do on that. We'll talk to him a little in just a little bit. And also in international news, a story we talked about both hours before. Time to fill up this morning is my side angle on this. As oil prices are surging, energy price leap is coming, if it hasn't already arrived, on the corner near your house in reaction to the Saudi the attack on the Saudi oil production facilities. More on this from Bob Constantini from Westwood One.
President Trump tweeting Sunday about the drone attack on Saudi oil facilities. There is reason to believe that we know the culprit are locked and loaded, depending on the verification. It is the president talking tough again on Iran, a nation that supports the rebels in Yemen who've claimed responsibility. Democrat Adam Schiff is chair of the House Intelligence Committee.
It's safe to say that the Houthis don't have the capability to do a strike like this without Iranian assistance.
Schiff was on CBS's Face the Nation. The Iranian Foreign Ministry tweets out that having failed in its maximum pressure campaign, the United States is willing to engage in maximum deceit. The Yemeni rebels who claimed responsibility for the attack say they carried it out and Iran was not involved, and the Saudis have not pointed a finger at Tehran. The two enemies are fighting a proxy war in Yemen. Republican Senator Rand Paul is leery of any Trump military action against Iran. And on Fox News Sunday, Democratic House member David Cicilline accusing Mr. Trump of wanting a crisis.
He ripped up the Iran deal, which was a deal that prevented Iran from becoming a nuclear power with nothing to replace it.
Whoever is responsible for the attack on Saudi petroleum facilities, the president is often worried about gasoline prices for Americans, announcing on Twitter, based on the attack on Saudi Arabia, which may have an impact on oil prices, I have authorized the release of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, if needed, in a to-be-determined amount. It's unclear what the crisis might mean to possible meetings between President Trump and Iran's President Hassan Rouhani at the United Nations General Assembly later this month. Among the many presidential tweets this weekend, the fake news is saying that I am willing to meet with Iran, no conditions. That is an incorrect statement. Maybe there are conditions now, but this was Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on Tuesday.
The president's made very clear he is prepared to meet with no preconditions.
And the president himself setting parameters in June on Meet the Press.
But you can't have a nuclear weapon. You want to talk good, otherwise you can have a bad economy for the next 3 years. Not as far as I'm concerned. No preconditions.
Bob Costantini, Washington.
All right, so a lot to work off of there. First of all, let me just a side note, and I don't know this. I don't know what's in the president's heart and mind, but he had a chance to ramp up the hot war against Iran months ago. Didn't do it, right? Could have taken out those missile installations and the Iranian guard that was there. Didn't do it. Ended up taking out a drone as response for that. Number two, John Bolton shown the door last week.
Right.
Okay. So Bolton resigned or he's fired. I don't know which one. I mean, they both say.
And part of the rumors surrounding that were that Bolton, he's strict on Iran, but that the president wanted to relieve some of these sanctions against Iran, and that was part of the difference between the two.
Bolton, a hawk. Bolton would look for a reason to engage a hot war with Iran. Mm-hmm. I mean, just not saying that the president could have stopped him, but Bolton in the past is, he's a neocon, okay? Then on top of this, I would argue that the president, it's, I really, as much as I can guess, would be way more interested in the price of gas and the American economy than the proxy war and the realpolitik of Iran versus Saudi Arabia. I mean, because I can make the president said a few months ago he didn't want to get in the Khashoggi thing, right? Because he didn't want to mess up this arms deal.
Mm-hmm.
So the business side to the president, whether you think it's right or wrong, the business side overtook the moral. World's policeman, you know, moral side mm-hmm. of this. So do you think that same president would want to engage in a war with Iran that would make the economy probably, if it's unstable now, would make it worse? If it's fine now, would make it unstable? Would be an issue for the president going into an election year? All this talk on the reports, like the president's just wanting to hop in a war with Iran, if all the things they said that he only cares about re-election are true, then he would stay out of it.
Right.
He would do what it takes to keep the oil prices down and keep the economy humming and stay out of this. And but you look at the situation, too, where we are involved in this proxy war because we're selling, you know, tons of weapons to the Saudis. Like I told you, I mean, Saudis are a strategic ally. I don't like it. I wish there was somebody else that we could choose from because I don't think the Saudis are the best country to have our nation aligned with. I don't, mm-hmm. not crazy about that, but that's the situation as it stands right now. And we're selling a huge amount of military hardware to them that by default is going to be used against the Houthi rebels. So it's really complicated situation, but those that say the locked and loaded, the president's famous for big rhetoric, you know, but the idea that the president, after letting Bolton go and showing what he did in the past and showing that he is a economy first kind of president, would be anxious to get into a hot war with Iran, I don't buy that right now.
So what does locked and loaded mean?
I don't know.
That's
don't
the
know.
Question now. Does he mean more...
That's rhetoric.
More tariffs, more...
Well, you can't do it. I mean,
not tariffs, but...
the embargo is locked down.
Yeah, can
I don't
do
know that. I don't know that we could do any more because we'd have to have other countries participate in this mm-hmm. and then that getting them convinced to do it. You have a situation, too. I was reading that story from Yahoo. Drone attack on Saudi oil field seen as Pearl Harbor moment. Who sees it as a Pearl Harbor moment? Maybe the Saudis, but I'll say as an American, I can only speak for myself, but as an American,
mm-hmm.
Did you feel that attack over the weekend was like when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor?
Not at all.
I didn't either. So, I mean, I see that headline. I question that.
The only comparison I could see with that would be if this were enough to finally push us into a war with Iran, if they're saying that Pearl Harbor was what finally caused everything to start.
But this is not the level. This is
no.
So let's go back to this headline for a second. In Pearl Harbor, the Imperial Japanese put a sneak attack on the American fleet in harbor on Oahu,
mm-hmm.
killing not engaged in a war. Sneak attack and attacked American assets, killing so many Americans, sinking so many battleships.
One of the worst American tragedies ever.
In this case, a drone attack from Yemeni Houthi rebels attacked a Saudi oil facility. Now, I'm not diminishing what happened there. Heck, Saudi Arabia has cut their production of oil by half right mm-hmm. now. That one facility that hit, I think, is responsible at full production for 5% of the planet's global, the crude oil on the planet.
So we're talking about potentially 2.5% of the
yes.
oil supply.
It's a big deal.
Right.
It's a very big deal. But it's a drone attacking an oil facility in another country. And you're saying that this is a Pearl Harbor moment. I don't see that. Tell me where I'm wrong. 343-0106. 343-0106. They're saying it's a Pearl Harbor moment. I'm not buying it.
No, not seeing it at all. But what will this... I mean, Iran, again, and we've seen this play itself over and over the last few months. It just keeps happening. Although there hasn't been an attack this big yet on the oil supply. This is a big one. But
yes.
we've seen Iran does something, or they assist the Houthis mm-hmm. in doing something. The U.S. and Saudi Arabia call them out and say, hey, we know that you're mm-hmm. probably behind this. Then Iran comes out and says, no, the U.S. is lying.
Mm-hmm.
They're right. making a big lie about this. And right. if they attack us, we're ready for war.
Right.
U.S. and the president say, no, we are. We're ready for war, too.
Yeah, we're more ready.
And then everybody forgets about it. We talk about Kavanaugh a little bit and something happens again 2 months later.
No, you're spot on. And it comes and goes like the tide here. And it'll come back. But right now, for there to be headlines were pretty provocative. Mm-hmm. It's a Pearl Harbor moment. And the other thing, too, is in that article, they did get into the amount of low-cost drones that could be used by non-state entities to do attacks. Think about just the drone technology in military side. We've been using it against enemies in the Middle East and anywhere we find the terrorist. Think about if other groups have drones that can fly around and threaten U.S. assets somewhere, or even get them stateside here, and we have a drones versus people war coming to our shores. Mm. So it's really a scary new world that's being laid out here. All right, grab some calls, 343-0106, 343-0106. Get you through. We'll talk when we get back. That's how you get in touch with all the shows. The 45, which, by the way, side note, just let me talk about how proud I am of all the shows on the station. 45 hours a week of organic programming, live local programming, what we create right here in this studio, put out to this market. Pretty darn cool. It's exactly what I wanted to do 10 years ago when we launched the station, and we're doing it, and just more hours to come.
45. That's huge.
Pretty cool.
45 in year 10. So
yeah, that's right.
It's our 10th anniversary too.
I want to grow it, so help us. All right. Steve in Mobile next up. Hey, Steve.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Just a little comment on your Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
And one of the scenarios you got to look at, just a few days prior to this attack, they said that we was within 2,000 miles of their missiles.
Mm-hmm.
And then you as a sportsman, you need to look at the pictures of the attack that they did. When you look at the oil refineries they hit, they're within 10 inches of each other. Each tank is hit in the exact same spot. And what's scary is nobody's seen these guys go 200-something miles to drop them bombs. And with that said, I'm afraid when the missiles go to fly, we might lose the ship.
You know, you wonder if they move from this proxy action, right? I mean, proxy wars isn't what we went through with the Soviet Union, right? In the Cold War, both sides be lined up back. But we weren't really fighting, but we were backing this group that was fighting that group. That's a dangerous game to play.
Yep, I'm afraid our guys will be caught in the middle of it.
I hope not. Lord knows, I hope not. I appreciate the calls. But Steve, thank you. And you're right. I mean, the accuracy of this, and this is not to get off on a tangent, but let's get off on a tangent for a second. Drone technology, and I hopefully we're way ahead of where anybody else is, but like Steve mentioned, with them getting past any kind of anti-missile technology, sneaking these in. And what does that mean? Don't worry, somebody's going to text in. You're giving them ideas. I'm not giving anybody ideas they hadn't thought of.
Right.
But terrorists or non-state actors out there that would be able to bring those kind of technologies here stateside.
Scary.
It's very scary. But I still, the Pearl Harbor part of it, I guess, is I still see Pearl Harbor. Maybe they're just using it as a technical or a, not technical term, but maybe an overall term. To me, when I hear Pearl Harbor as an American, it means certain things to me. And it means a direct attack on Americans and then the rise of the sleeping giant of the United States to enter into World War II. Jay is in Mobile. He's next up. Hey, Jay.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I think that what we have as far as this Pearl Harbor analogy is that, you know, they like to blow everything up. I mean, it's kind of like hurricanes. Every hurricane that's ever out in the Gulf is the worst one that's ever happened. And the problem that you have with this type of mentality when you do have a bad situation or a bad hurricane is like the little boy that cried wolf. And that's what happened with Katrina. We've had hurricane after hurricane. They were always the worst. And when Katrina hit, it lost its power because they were always so bad. But I want to talk about something that's I think you've hit a nerve with me anyway. It's about these drones. Years ago, in the 1980s, I mean, I want to say the thing was John Carpenter made a movie about where these machines take over. And I think
we're heading
in a direction like that.
The Terminator?
I think that was it. And, you know, now we have these drones, which are basically capable of fighting a war almost on their own. I mean, one thing that comes to mind is some kid sitting, you know, I guess in a missile command space and commanding all these drones where it's almost like a video game now. Mm-hmm. And it's just very concerning when we start and think about you know, the direction that we're going. And I think that you've hit a very important nerve. I mean, the technology is there. It's a lot easier to send 10 drones versus one man, because if the drone gets blown up, well, you know, we can build another drone, but we can't replace a pilot. It's easy. I guess we could, but it just is very concerning, Sean, and I think that you've made a very good point. And, you know, you brought up the movie The Terminator, and to a certain extent, it looks like we're heading in that direction with these machines. And, you know, later on, I think that that guy from Star Wars stole John Carpenter's thing, and had what was that movie, The Drone Wars or something?
Well, that was but Lucas had written that stuff, I think, beforehand. The drone, they referenced the drones in the first start, 77.
Right.
I think they referenced the drone there. So, but Jay, I appreciate your call. There's two things going on, right? There's the current question of what happened here, what's the next step in the simmering and sometimes teapot steaming relations between the United States and Iran, and obviously the attention there because of the huge output of oil. I know that everybody wants to say everything's for the pure reasons. Come on, y'all. I mean, the major catalyst here, not saying there's not good-hearted reasons for engagement there, but this is that zone right there is about the oil. It is all about the oil.
Of course. That's why they're striking there. I mean,
yes.
And Iran, and if this is Iran that did it, which is what America is saying it is right now, even though Iran's denying it, in Saudi Arabia, I don't think they've actually come out and said that they believe it is Iran. So they're kind of waiting.
Well, they're saying it's the Houthi rebels, and the Houthi rebels are backed by Iran.
And then
we are backing the Saudis because we are selling them the tech. So if you're a Houthi rebel, okay, this is just obviously my allegiances are with my nation. Okay, but just to exercise, do a little mental exercise. If you're the Iranians and you're the Houthis, and the munitions are being used against you,
mm-hmm.
are what the United States sells to Saudi Arabia. I'm not saying it's right, but you can build a case,
right,
to rile up people and say the United States is funding in a way, even though it's not true. We're selling it, but you're Iran. You're the Houthis. You're making the case. United States is attacking you.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to get back at them, and then that goes. That's what scares me. That goes beyond just attacking the Saudis. Where does that go down the road? What kind of war could be asymmetric? War could be brought to bear that we haven't seen yet.
And that's what the worry is. And they've been doing it for a long time now, but especially over the last few months. We saw with the ships carrying the oil that they attacked. Mm-hmm. Then I think the Japanese ship was the first one, right, where we saw Iran go after the Japanese ship that was carrying oil. And then now these attacks here. I think they knew that this was going to get this kind of response. We've seen the president though talk about this, you know, make these threats on Twitter before, when he pulled back after Iran shot that drone down. The U.S. said it was over land. Iran said it was over international waters. Iran said it was over their land. We said it was over international waters. So what will be that tipping point? What do you think it would take for this to actually turn into a war?
I think it'd have to be way bigger than what we've seen so far, because to disagree with the major pundits out there this morning, I don't think President Trump is looking for a war. I think he's looking for negotiations. I think he's looking for low gas prices, good economy, and re-election. That's what I think he's looking for. We'll talk about this when we get back. But also some state news. Our buddy Jeff Poore joins us in just a second as we roll on. Mobile Mornings on a Monday. Glad you're here. Oh, by the way, too, on the text line, whoever that is, unnamed texter, you may be right. You said Bolton probably paid for the newspaper title about Pearl Harbor. No way. About to get into some more in-depth and some real talk about the news and state news. Our buddy Jeff Poore is joining us. And by the way, he's going to be with me during Midday Mobile today. But my buddy Ben sent this. As we got off on that discussion, I didn't come up with the Terminator. It was J.R. Collar was talking about there was a movie, mm-hmm. and I just inserted the movie Terminator, right? Because that was the question he was asking. All right. Well, that started a whole bunch of people on the text line talking about Terminator. then I saw this from our buddy Ben. He said, it's a quote here. And Ben knows my Achilles heel because he referenced the movie Piranha 2, the Spawning, which is, remember years ago we got in a discussion of movies so bad that they're good?
Mm-hmm.
And my number one on that list was Piranha 2, The Spawning.
Right next to The Leprechaun.
It's even better than The Leprechaun movie. If you would like fall out the seat laughing at a movie, Piranha 2, The Spawning is the winner. So, Ben sends this quote. In Rome, Italy, during the release of Piranha 2, The Spawning, director James Cameron fell ill and had a dream about a metallic torso holding kitchen knives dragging itself from an explosion. That was inspired by director John Carpenter, who had made the slasher film Halloween on a low budget. Cameron used that dream as a launching pad to write the slasher-style film. Cameron's agent disliked the Terminator concept and requested that he work on something else. After this, Cameron dismissed his agent. Maybe this is what he meant. So this was meaning. Maybe that's the whole thing. But Ben, you had me at Piranha 2, The Spawning.
The Spawning.
Do you think that's on Netflix?
It's got to be, right? Or at least on Epix.
What's Epix?
It's another station of channels. Kind of, you'll find it next to the Showtimes, HBOs, okay. You know, the like. But they play a lot of movies like the Piranha series, The Leprechaun.
<Series? laughs>
You know, I've seen Piranha 1. Somehow Piranha 2, The Spawning, got past me.
Okay, the Piranha are in this sunken Spanish galleon, and they only come out at night, and then they fly, and they attack people at the resort. It's... let's get to our buddy Jeff Poor with Lanyette Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, host of the Jeff Poor Show on WVNN in Huntsville. Hey, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Sean.
Piranha 2, The Spawning. Have you seen it?
I have not.
put that on your list. Well, I'll tell you what. You come over to the house, you know, once you're in town, you bring the wife, come over to the house. We'll have a family watching of Piranha 2, The Spawning. And it's a...
let me circle my calendar.
A lot to talk about with you here. And I want to get into, I guess, and if you want to comment on what we're talking about with the situation with Iran right now and the locked and loaded comments, we can take that. And I also want to talk about some state news, several of the stories you have up with Yellowhammer News I want to get into. Any comment on the president and the situation right now with Iran?
I think he's doing... like I said, I think you may have said this, that Trump's worried about oil prices, releasing the strategic oil reserves. And I think some of the rhetoric, although it could be interpreted to be very hawkish, and however you want to take it, I do think it's meant to be kind of part of the foreign policy. And we've only seen Trump really react to anything with military force once. He's right. Backed off a couple of times. So we'll see. I think they're still wanting to make sure that they think they have, that it is the Iranians that they'll launch those strikes.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of us, looking at it, can say yes, but, you know, we're just kind of guessing. You have to wait for intelligence to come back, but I have a feeling, if the Houthi rebels do it, then that's fine, but they're still, if they're doing it at the request of the Iranians, I mean, if you hire a hitman, you go to jail, too.
Right. Right, and then I think that's, that remains to be seen. That's perhaps why we haven't seen anything really happen yet. I've heard Trump is talking to the Iranians, and I just think it's just a matter of time, and it'll either go one or two ways.
Let's say this was enough to spur some military action from the United States. I mean, what, Jeff, is there any hunger from any Americans for boots on the ground at all? Would he ever even entertain that theory, that notion at all?
I think there's hunger from maybe it is about 2% of the public, but I think that 2% resides in some very powerful places in Washington, D.C. Look, guys, I mean, it's no secret. The defense contractors in this country really really like when the United States gets these armed conflicts.
Beware of the military-industrial complex.
Trump into it.
Yeah, well, beware of the military-industrial complex, but... hopefully the voice of the people, and I would argue a lot of the people that put President Trump in office would say, not this. You know, our sons and daughters aren't going for this.
Yeah, well, we'll start to see if you start to see a sales job, watch for that. Remember the build-up to the Iraq War?
Mm-hmm.
You know, any signs the president's going to be addressing the nation tonight kind of stuff. Who's out in front of the cameras? Really watch that. Really watch who's the surrogates for this arc. All of a sudden, you're watching TV and you see a lot of surrogates talking about military action. There's there's at least a concerted effort underway to push the administration into doing something. If it's boots on the ground, I think that might be, we're not quite there yet, but maybe it's some kind of airstrike or something along those lines.
All right, bring it back to state news, and I retweeted your story from yellowhammernews.com talking about the appearance on Capitol Journal Friday night of State Senator Vivian Figures talking about being appointed to this A-Trip 2 committee replacing Senator Chris Elliott. Jeff, in your writing on what Senator Figures had to say, it seems like her stance is not, as laid out, not very different from the stance of Chris Elliott.
No, but I can tell you, I think, at least if you talk to people in the governor's office, their biggest qualm with Chris Elliott, Senator Elliott, was they will tell you that he changed positions on the toll bridge, that he was at one time pro for it, and then he switched gears, and then there's all kinds of other little side things that led to his dismissal from A-Trip 2. But I don't think it was just his position on the toll bridge itself.
It just is interesting, like you and I have talked about, that back during the push for the gas tax increase, that board where you're written down as naughty or nice in the governor's office on your vote for the gas tax, you have a yes vote for the gas tax gets kicked off the A-Trip 2 committee, and a no vote for the gas tax replaces him.
Yeah, and that's the hardball we probably didn't see coming, did we, when it comes to KIV? I didn't see it. If you told me this time a year ago she was going to be the she was going to wield her what power the governor's office has, then I wouldn't have believed it, because we never saw it during her term filling out the rest of Bentley's term. And it just didn't seem like that kind of a governor. And then things sort of changed when she got elected or reelected. And I think the big change came when Steve Pelham left to go to Auburn University and Joe Bonner came in to be her chief of staff.
You would think that, if anything, it would be a softened approach to Southwest Alabama with Joe Bonner in that position.
I don't know about that. When you talk to these folks, some of the with the governor's office and some people really close to that office, they will tell you this. They thought they could get away with this. They're playing by an antiquated playbook, Sean. And they thought that only people that would care about that toll bridge would be people in Baldwin and Mobile County, and they could just power it through. The rest of the state would not care. The rest of the state would not be paying attention to it, and they would take a hit down here, but they would be okay in the long run.
That didn't work out so well.
No, it didn't. And like I said, they're playing by an old playbook. Things are different now. There's lots of social media. There is the radio shows that we do in the state, Sean. They're on podcast. The people are paying attention to the state politics altogether now, and it's not like it used to be, where Mobile might as well have been Mexico or something, and people just didn't listen to what was going on down here in other parts of the state.
All right, coming right back, more with Jeff Poor. And Jeff's going to be in Studio 2 for Midday Mobile today, starting at noon. Take your calls as well, 343-0106, and we'll get to these texts when we return as well. Right, 8:51 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Mobile Mornings on this Monday. Glad to have you along. Dalton said something during the news break there that confirms what I've told y'all about 1-800-GOT-JUNK all these years. Now, number one, the key is needing 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You got junk in the house, at the office, around the house. Like I said, you got a swing set in the backyard. You got boxes full of stuff in a junk room. You got a storage unit you need cleaned out. Whatever it is, they can handle it with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. But when you call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or go to their website, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, you get an actual appointment time. Like, they give you a day and give you an hour of that day that they will be there.
Right.
versus you had dealings with groups now that gave you a spectrum. What was your spectrum you were given?
Yeah, so I'm dealing with this company that's mm-hmm. supposed to come and finish a job they've been working on for mm-hmm. a little while. Mm-hmm. And I called and said, hey, what time are they supposed to be out? They said, today between 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. And they'll call before they arrive. Like, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
That's it. So there's so at some point, like 10:45, they're going to be like, hello.
Yeah.
Hello,
we're here. Just a 14-hour window.
So listen, number one, they do great work. Number two, they give you actual decent appointment times you agree on with them, and that's when they're there. They quote you a price. If you say yes, they get to work. That's my buddy Trey and his local crew working at Mobile and Baldwin Counties. 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Continue our conversation with Jeff Poore. Jeff, this is something that came up during the break, and then I want to get to some of these texts, but you and Dalton were batting it back and forth here about the latest hubbub that doesn't seem to have much traction here about impeaching Kavanaugh based on what?
Based on a New York Times book that's about to come out today, excerpted in, I guess, a Sunday paper of the New York Times. Did he engage in some kind of sexual inappropriate behavior in his youth or something like that? And as of last night, they had to issue a correction, a clarification, that the actual victim doesn't even recall the incident. Anyway, so it's that led a lot of the Sunday show discussion yesterday morning before the correction about impeaching Kavanaugh. And Senator Jones, he was in Birmingham for the 16th Street bombing in Birmingham for that commemoration. Said, you know, if Kavanaugh lied about any of this in the Senate Judiciary Committee, he should. Impeachment ought to be a consideration. But it sounds like the impeachment train, it didn't go very far after this New York Times report kind of fell apart.
So this is by Wednesday. Is anybody talking about this?
I think if they are, they're talking about how the New York Times screwed it up.
There you go.
But I did notice, and in an article that was written, that pretty much every single candidate for president on the Democrat side weighed in on Kavanaugh needing, and they all said he needed to be impeached before the Times came back out and corrected their original statement. So to me, this is part of the larger story where there's resentment building up still on both sides of the aisle, because the Democrats, who probably don't know that this story was ever corrected, still feel like Kavanaugh has another strike against his name.
Right. Well, here's the deal, though. You're not going to go wrong as a Democratic presidential candidate, I think, talking about impeaching Kavanaugh fairly or unfairly. That's kind of, I don't know that there's a whole lot of damage they're going to take for that. Maybe some back off with the far left ones. And there's certainly a lot of far lefties on that presidential slate, I think. They're not going to be hurt by any of that.
We haven't had a chance to talk since the showing in Houston. What do you think came out, speaking of the Democrats and Democrats that want to be president, is it whose game is it to win? I mean, who's got the ball right now for the Democrats?
Well, Biden's game to lose, I think, is the more of the question you want to ask. And he's playing pretty good defense. He's good, doing a good job of giving the game away. The analogy I like to draw, let's look at Biden and Trump. When they both announced their presidential aspirations, they both had big leads at the very beginning. The big difference was with Trump, no one took it serious. He's going to come back down to earth. He's not going to stay up there. And that kept him kind of on his feet, doing these rallies, throwing haymakers at all the other candidates. And he kept his lead throughout the whole process. Ben Carson may have gotten close right before the Iowa caucuses, but that was it. And the difference is Biden's not doing that. I mean, the first part of Biden's, right after his announcement, Biden kind of went into the witness protection program. We didn't see much Biden. He wasn't anywhere. And then he shows up in that first debate totally unprepared and not really playing to win, just playing not to lose. And you know how that goes in football. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how that campaign looks to me. Do they find their sea legs? Do they get on and run like the front runner? We'll have to wait and see.
See what? And I don't know. really any of the Democrats, because I think the worry, you and I have talked about this before, and looking at the situation right now with Iran and oil prices, and would this cause an economic slowdown? I mean, if you look at $100 per barrel oil, it usually has in history caused slowdown in the economy, which is, I think, the biggest opponent for President Trump next year. What, I don't know a Democrat that, if it's Biden, if it's Harris, if it's any of them, that could make hay off that and say, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to turn this around. I haven't seen a one of them that makes me think they've got the economic chops to turn this around.
They're not talking economy at all, guys.
Zero.
They're talking climate change. They're talking LGBT. They're talking Medicare for all. They're not talking about the economy. When they do talk about economic issues, they want to say health care is an economic issue, but they're not talking about nuts and bolts and job growth. You know, those things that we always talk about when we talk about economic growth at a local level, right?
Yep.
So I do think that's Trump's biggest vulnerability, however. When the economy, or if the economy does go south, and if it's before the election, that's when voters tend to... you know, especially if we have a big crisis situation like we had in 2008, that's when voters might start looking at Democratic Party policies. The capitalism has just gone too far that it needs to be reined in, and we need somebody like an Elizabeth Warren there keeping the financial sector in check. That's what you need to be worried about if you're worried about a Democrat president. I don't think this Russia stuff or anything else, none of that stuff matters. It's are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
There you go. Coming up at noon today, we'll talk more about this with Jeff. Jeff, people want to follow you on Twitter. How do they do that?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_4.
There you go. And we're out of here until noon. Mike Gallagher Show on the way next. See you in a few.